Hi, welcome back to Winged and Ready. I am psyched to be sitting in the UBS studio with my friend James Jack. He is the head of the business owner segment here and a managing director and a national resource with UBS. I will let him introduce himself, but we're coming to the midpoint of the year. There's been a lot of very interesting things, so I'm very excited to share with the audience this real-time conversation. We're going in raw, no prepped questions, and I think it's going to be a good one. James, would you mind giving our listeners a little bit of your background?
I would not mind. Diane, thank you for having me, first and foremost. So a little bit about me. I live in New York City. I'm from New Jersey originally, but I've lived here longer than I lived in New Jersey. I love to travel personally, so I've been to all 50 states.
That's cool.
And all 7 continents.
That's very cool.
So that's kind of my big passion. For what I've done professionally, I've been at UBS my whole career. It's 20 years as of earlier this summer. So I've been here half my life.
That's awesome.
For the last 7 or 8 years, I've been formed and leading the business owners client segment at UBS. So really what my role is to do is to help our business owner clients and the financial advisors that serve them, such as yourself, to think about the important aspects of their business and how UBS can help, but with a heightened focus on what I think could possibly be one of the most significant financial events of their lives, selling their business and exiting their business.
Yeah.
It's been a great several years doing this. Mm-hmm. I've met incredible people, and like you mentioned, I'm national in focus, so I get to, get to be all over the place, and talk to really exciting and interesting people. So it's a great job. I love this job. It's so incredible just talking to business owners.
That's awesome. And you get to travel, so you get to have your cake and eat it too a little bit when you go on your
It helps. Your work trips. I guess the one positive side of not having a girlfriend, I guess, is that I can travel fairly frequently. So you gotta take the pros and the cons.
For me, it's my dogs that keep me tethered.
Yeah, I'd love to have a dog. I'd love to have a dog, but it would be unfair to the animal. So maybe one day when I retire.
That's awesome. So you are talking to people all across the country. You're talking to advisors all across the country. You're also working closely with other thought leaders internally. Tell me what's top of mind for you today as we sit squarely just past the midpoint of the year.
Top of mind for me, what I would say is about the M&A market. Mm-hmm. I'm going to circle back to that, though, in a second. I think the last few weeks we've been talking a lot about things from the president. So
yeah.
Tariffs and the One Big Beautiful Bill. On the One Big Beautiful Bill, which is great about UBS is we have these, tax and political experts who've really dived into that. And there's some interesting things from a business owner side that have been interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly affirming and making permanent many of the provisions from the 2017 Tax mm-hmm. Jobs and Act. That's incredibly helpful for business owners. So, but in a way, that was kind of went through. It got happened. He got it by July 4th. So it hasn't had the drama, I think, that we all come to expect on these big bills. But much of the key things, I think, on exiting, particularly on the gift and estate tax exemption, making that permanent at $15 million to increase with inflation, that creates a lot of certainty for business owners. So it does connect with what I often mm-hmm. do. So that's kind of one topic. Tariffs, though, still very much a topic of discussion, especially... July was kind of the deadline that the president set, and he's now pushed that to the beginning of August. We'll see where things go as more countries come in with deals. We have some more certainty post Liberation Day that mm-hmm. the tariffs are in a smaller range, but just the last few days, the president was suggesting 30% tariffs on on some of our closest allies. So that does upend some things a little bit about, I think, where people thought, you know, a few weeks ago. So that's a big question, because what does that mean for M&A? And so back to M&A, if we had this conversation in January, you know, there was all this exuberance, yes, about what was going to be happening this year, because the last few years have been challenging in the M&A environment.
Correct.
Challenging for what people want or expect. In reality, the numbers have been similar to what they were several years ago. It's just, you know, you had a lot of activity in 2021, so people are trying to maintain that. So it's not like, you know, the world was ending by any means. But we had a lot of, you know, we were very excited, because 2024 was the first kind of year-over-year increase since 2021 in M&A environment. It hasn't really planned out. I think some of that is to about some uncertainty in the economy. Some of it is on higher rates, and I think a lot of it is on the uncertainty around trade and what does that mean,
right,
on the tariffs. But I think, you know, we've got the one big beautiful bill that's kind of signed off now. We seem to be getting closer to where we might be on tariffs, and at some point rates will probably come down, and so I think that does create some opportunity. But when will that actually happen? We've been waiting for it. So
right.
So that's kind of the topic that I think that I'm really looking at right now, is what does that mean for business owners?
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm thinking back to like circa 2012 and 2013, you used to hear all the talking heads in the media, you know, kicking the can down the road. We haven't heard that phrase coming back as much, but it does seem like the M&A market is pushing out a little bit until we get uncertainty cleared from what's happening in the White House. And also, you know, I think people discount how heavily this pocket of the country relies on manufacturing, and there are a lot of small business owners who are manufacturers with niche products globally. So I think I'm feeling, as a boots on the ground person talking to those manufacturers, that it certainly is not helping their certainty or their business planning at all. But while business planning may be a little uncertain, to your point, people can plan their family balance sheets,
yeah,
and tee up for when the uncertainty is removed. Do you have any case studies or suggestions for things that, when you talk to business owners or to other advisors, what people should start thinking about this year?
Well, I would say, Diane, is oftentimes I get a call from a client, and they'll say, I'm selling my business and we're closing in 60 days. How do I, you know, how do I maximize my net proceeds and reduce my taxable burden?
You don't.
Right, exactly, exactly. And it's like, well, you know, can you invent a time machine and call me 6 months ago?
Right.
You know, kind of a thing. So ignoring just the specifics of the one big beautiful bill, we'll dive a little bit deeper into it, but like, I think just my general advice, regardless of what the tax provisions are, is you really need to be thoughtful and intentional, and you have to do it well in advance.
Mm-hmm.
That is the key piece of advice. And, you know, I think waiting too long, unfortunately, reduces the potential power that you can get. I think when I talk about planning in front of business owners, a lot of people, you know, they kind of, their eyes roll back, because it's like, oh, planning, you know,
right,
it's kind of boring sounding. It sounds about being organized, and it is about being organized. But for business owners, there are millions of dollars at stake.
Right.
It's real dollars.
It's legacy.
Totally. And you can have a significant impact on what you pay in taxes by being thoughtful and executing some of these things well in advance. You know, if you think about, you know, just $10 million of estate planning, you know, gifting that out, not paying 40% taxes on that, that's $4 million.
Yeah.
You know, right? And with proper planning, you know, it will now be $15 million next year with the One Big Beautiful Bill, but $15 million could really become, I don't know, 18 or 19 if you're doing discounts or if you're really thinking that through, and then not only adding to the fact that you can move appreciation outside of your estate if it's a long-term asset. So there's real dollars at stake, both from a planning standpoint and then a charitable planning standpoint, that you can do to help the people and causes you care about.
Right.
So generally, regardless of what the actual dollar amount is you want to be in advance, and we can dive a little bit deeper into that. But if you think about just a few of the strategies, if you're thinking about taking discounts due to lack of marketability or discounts due to lack of control in estate planning, and what that means is, you know, you have an asset, and you're not taking the full value of that asset when you
right.
gift it. You're discounting it because I'm only selling 5% to this trust, and that 5% can't, you know, vote in terms of control, or you can't just sell this stock willy-nilly at any time. So you have these reasons why you can take discounts. If you take those things, you know, that's going to really add up. But you have to be thoughtful. And if you say, I'm going to take a discount due to lack of control and marketability, and then next month sell the business, the IRS is going to say, what do you
right.
mean taking those discounts?
Right.
They're going to ask for that back. So you need to create time, a time difference between that. So that's like
yeah.
one thing.
Get way ahead of that LOI.
Totally. If you're going to take advantage of something called qualified small business stock, one of the requirements of that is holding that for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
If you sell the business in 4 years, or, you know, let's say you sell a business in 4 years and 6 months. Well, maybe it made sense to hold that business for another 6 months before
right.
you sold it. So you can get that benefit, because that benefit could be $10 million of capital gains tax-free,
yeah.
which at 23.8%, that's almost $2.4 million.
Nothing
and that's before
that.
We do anything fun with stacking or anything like that to make that number higher. So intentionality is really, really important. And I think that's where a lot of business owners, you know, they're not focused on it, or they're focused on the day to day.
Right.
And as a result of that, you know, they're doing their everyday things that they're keeping the business running. And so they don't want to jinx anything, or they just don't have the time. And so if you're thinking that you're getting close within 5 years of selling a business, it really does make sense to start doing some of that stuff. You don't necessarily have to execute every one of those things. You can plan it, you can be thoughtful about it, and then maybe fund or execute trusts or whatever a little bit later, as long as you still create that separation
yeah.
that you want. So that would be, you know, my key thing, and I see it all the time. But, you know, I just mentioned two general strategies
right.
where we were already saving millions of dollars.
Millions. And I love both of those strategies as well when you think about it in the context of pre-experiencing decision-making. Like, even if you don't sell the business that year, at least you have a framework that you know you feel comfortable with. And if it's the next year or the year after that, you'll be able to make your decisions more quickly. And often, when you're in markets like this, when the floodgates open again, you might be in a position to have to make a decision very quickly.
I think that's a great point about the market and when things will open up again. If we go back to 2020, when no activity was happening because of COVID, right?
Yeah.
You know, everyone stopped, everyone wasn't ready. And then by the end of 2020 through 2021, there was a flood of activity. And the people who were prepared, who were ready, who had built their business case, had shown why they're a great business, and had all of their things in order, they were able to sell at the top of the market.
Yeah.
Those were the highest valuations. They were the quickest to exit, right? All of those things. I don't know when that will happen again, but it probably will happen at some point. We will get more certainty on the things that are holding things back right now. And we're seeing still a strong economy, and rates will likely come down at some point. So if you wait until all of that happens, you know, you're going to have to do your estate planning, your planning, and then you're going to have to get the business in shape. That's going to take several months. And then you're going to go through a process, and that takes several months, and then you sell it. like that's many, many money months of time.
Yeah.
So if you wait until things turn around, you know, there's a good chance you might miss the boat. And so now, while there is a bit of this pause, I think that gives a great time for business owners to be thinking about what their strategy is and what their intentions are and start laying out, gathering what they need to do, so that they're ready.
Right. And not to discount the joy factor, if you do all of those decisions and planning ahead of time, when the moment comes, you can be in it.
Yeah.
And then all of the people you work with, your advisor, your attorney, your CPA, everybody's in sync. And it's more like, you know, high-fiving, hugging, and corking the champagne because you got it across the finish line. You knew exactly what you were doing.
Right.
Versus everyone's hair being on fire. And, you know, sometimes there are professionals in different fields that when their hair's on fire, they're just trying to ink it and get it done too. And so you can leave money on the table that way.
Well, not just money on the table, Dan. Like, I think a lot of people, there's a common statistic in the exit planning industry that says, you know, 75% of business owners have regret when they exit their business. I think that number personally is probably a little inflated. It's like 12 years old, 13 years old. I think the exit planning industry has gotten a lot better. But the point of it is, directionally, it's still fine, which is, you know, you've gotten into this process, you've exited it, and it's like, oh man, I could have gotten this, or I could have still been in the business, or I could have done ABC. If you're more thoughtful and you're working with your advisors and you're taking the time to lay it out, I think that will give a better chance of, you know, not having that regret.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm really hopeful for. And that's a big part of like what I'm trying to articulate when I train advisors or when I speak with business owners or fellow advisors is, you know, yes, there's the value of doing this because hopefully that drives more value for the business, or hopefully it means more net proceeds of the sale. And that's very easy to calculate because there's dollars and cents behind it. But hopefully also the business owner feels like they're on better footing. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, at least in our business, in wealth management, hopefully this is a lifelong, multi-generational relationship.
Right.
Right? And so when everyone else goes home, you know, presumably we're still at the table. And so there's more at stake for us. And so in serving the client. So that's why I'm really, really trying to say, like, let's be thoughtful. Let's bring it all together so that hopefully the business owner feels great post this transaction and can really live out, you know, their next chapter. And maybe a last point on that next chapter is important because let's say you're 65 or 70 years old when you sell this business. There's a good chance you have a lot of runway left.
Yeah.
You know, the average age is, you know, kind of 65-ish years old. But if you've made it to 65, then like the average age is like something like 80 years old, right? Like, you know, once you've made it to that age, you're likely going to live a good amount of time. So you've got a lot of time left, God willing. And, you know, that creates some nervousness, of course, but also a great opportunity on what, you know, this next chapter will be for the people and causes you care about.
Yeah. And it's an opportunity too. I think so many business owners have been either a sounding board for advice or a mentor, or somebody's called them and said, hey, tell me how you got here. How have you been successful? It's their chance to do that again.
Totally.
To have, you know, their 2.0 to your point and continue giving that advice out and being, you know, after I exited, this is what my transition looked like, and this is what I got involved in, and this is why it was amazing and awesome, and how my family and friends supported me. Like, that story continues. It's not an end point. I think that's really important to what you said, how we can help and still be at the table and part of the planning. There's a big part of the emotional aspect that's part of that planning as well. You'll meet one of my friends shortly after this podcast, Natalie McVeigh, and she shared a statistic with me on a prior episode that the mortality rate for business owners within 2 years of exiting is extremely high when they don't have that second plan in place, what they're going to do with themselves.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think on that topic, I like to talk to business owners in terms of like life after planning. I like to say that a business tends to, in generally, give the business owner three things. So one is how they spend their time. You know, you're working 40, 50 hours a week for the last 20, 30, 40 years. You know, you've spent a lot of time on this. So a lot of business owners become concerned about how they will fill their time afterwards. Not just the business owner, but their family.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, you're going to be at home a lot more.
Right.
You know.
Even when they were at home before, they were still working. And I would argue that number probably is like 60, 70, or 80 hours
a week. Yeah, certainly. For a business owner, particularly. So time is number one. Number two, I think a lot of people have worries about their social life.
Yeah.
Their business is their social life. It's the employees that they're friendly with. It's their customers that they're friendly with. It's the community around them. So a lot of business owners have some worries about, you know, if I'm no longer Mr. or Mrs. CEO, will those relationships last? Will they continue to flourish? Some will naturally find, you know, a natural end, but hopefully many will continue, right? Because it's about more than just the business relationship. But people do worry about that. And so that's sometimes where people find something new to fill in. And maybe they're spending more time with their kids or grandkids or doing more hobbies, traveling a bit more. And then the third part is their purpose. It's their passion. It's, you know, why do they get out of bed? And it's to do whatever they're doing in their business. And again, connecting the dots with the other two, time and social life, maybe they are giving back to the business owner community in terms of not just as an investor maybe, but as a mentor, or they're becoming more charitably inclined and they're focused on those endeavors. Those three things, I think, are really good ways for an advisor to talk to a business owner about what life will be like afterwards. And as a financial advisor, you know, you're not going to be able to solve all three of those things, but I think you can be a great help because you can integrate some of those things into a financial plan. So maybe it's, I'm going to give more of my time and treasure to charity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, let's think through that. What does that mean in terms of a financial plan? I'm going to travel a bit more. Okay, well, let's make sure we put that into the financial plan because, you know, you're going to have a finite nest egg now going forward.
Yeah.
Will you be able to buy a second home and do the first class travel and, you know, pay for your kids' tuition? All of those types of goals. And, you know, and then what will you be doing? Some people say they're going to play golf, but, I believe it or not, I think you can get tired of playing golf every day. So, you know, you want to keep, you know, the brain strong and keep yourself occupied. So those are things that, as a financial advisor, we can talk to our clients about and really showcase a different side of what we do. Mm-hmm. And yes, it comes into, okay, a financial plan, but just simply talking about it and getting it on the table, I think will really lighten the load of the trepidation that comes with uncertainty because now you're talking to somebody about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think, and maybe this is a very strong opinion of mine, but with the institutional...
I love strong opinions.
I think it's their responsibility to be a steward of their knowledge and to share it with others. I mean, it's a unique thing that somebody has gone through, and they have institutionalized that knowledge and that process in their head. And you mentioned being a mentor. I mean, they can be an amazing mentor not only to other business owners, but if they're charitably inclined, like you said, to charities, helping out the board make decisions. I mean, that whole decision-making framework that a business owner has is so unique and rare They're just wired differently.
Totally.
Like they look at risk differently. And, you know, if you've got a rare breed of a way of thinking, like, I think it's your responsibility to share that back, because you're likely going to have a viewpoint that other people around the table would not have otherwise had. So
I like it. I think I like your strong opinion. Yeah, you know, stand on that one. That's a good one to stand on.
Give back, owners.
Yeah, totally. In the right way that fits you for sure.
Yeah, and it's also fun, right? You maybe don't have an exact picture of what you're going to be. You're not going to sell your business and hop out of the bed. Well, maybe not hop out of bed the next day and be like, well, this is what I'm doing now.
Unlikely.
Yeah. But, you know, if you're willing to share your experience and your decision-making process, at least you're bridging that gap and you're staying involved, like you said, keeping the rigor around it, which mm-hmm. is important.
And I think also is for a lot of business owners, their family identity is also around the business. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's not just like, oh, here's the keys back, I'm out. Like it doesn't work like that. So there's so much that goes into it. And I think a business owner can be, you know, really, really thoughtful about what they want to do and achieve and do great things.
Yeah. And on that note too, one thing that I've noted in the past, I think in prior episodes, but for people who aren't charitably inclined, it can financially make a lot of sense to have your charity bucket, because a lot of people in your community may be making asks of you once they know that you've exited and your cash situation looks different. So it's really helpful whether you're single or you have a family or you're multi-generational, that everyone agrees on, hey, what's the mission going forward? And you align yourself that way. So it can lessen the amount of people who are pulling at your pant leg for handouts. And it also gives you a marketing budget, if you will. Like, you know where you're spending. If you want to buy a table at a gala or make a significant donation, you've set that money aside the same way you would for taking a big vacation or paying for a wedding or something like that.
Well, I think what a lot of business owners don't know about is, you know, there's foundations and donor advised funds and you know the specifics of that, but I think when a lot of people think about charitable donations, it's okay, I need to give X dollars away this year. When you sell a business, that's going to be a big moment, because you're trying to offset some of that one time income. But I think a lot of clients that I've spoken to say, oh, well, you know, I'm giving away a lot of money all at one time. And there are some really interesting strategies with trusts and donor advised funds, like I mentioned, where you can kind of take that deduction when you need to, and then that gets put into a separate account for investing. You don't get to take the money back, but you can manage it in a sense with your financial advisor, of course, and then over time disperse it. So, you know, instead of giving $1 million all at one time to my local university, I can give, you know, I can take the $1 million deduction today and I can give $100,000 next year and $100,000 the year after that, $100,000 and so on and so forth. So I'm spreading out my giving. So it gives me the opportunity to give longer, while also that has the ability to hopefully, you know, enjoy market returns. So there's some really interesting strategies that most people, you know, they just wouldn't know about, because why would you?
Right.
And they're really meant to incentivize, it's really meant to incentivize business growth and charitable inclinations and things like that. So the planning part of it,
it's so important.
I go back to that. If you can be thoughtful and intentional well in advance, I think you can think about, okay, well, this is how I'm going to support my family. This is how I'm going to support my quote-unquote retirement. This is how I'm going to keep myself active, how I'm going to keep my brain challenged. It sounds like a lot, and it is a lot, but this is a major moment. And, you know, you can do really, really powerful stuff if you're thoughtful about it. When I get the call, I'm selling the business next month, how do I pay no taxes or whatever it is? It's just, it's a lot harder to be thoughtful and intentional to really maximize what you can achieve in that opportunity.
That's so beautifully said. And it's worth investing the time and effort into doing it to achieve all of those amazing things you just told us about. I am Diane Johnston. I'm a financial advisor in our Jericho, New York office. If you want to have any follow-ups to this discussion, please give me a ring at 516-745-8964, or you could drop me an email at diane.johnston@ubs.com. James, any final words for our listeners today?
Well, first of all, I'd say thank you for having me on. This was indeed fun. I would say is, you know, be thoughtful, be intentional, and recognize that as an American business owner, entrepreneur, you know, you are a rare breed and you are critically important because you're driving much of the growth and the job activity in our great country. But there are a lot of rules and things that are set up that you can take advantage of, and you just have to be thoughtful and smart about it and be on it early. Don't wait to the last minute.
Thank you. That's a great way to close. Thanks, James.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that clients understand the ways in which we conduct business, that they carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide to them about the products or services we offer. For more information, visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG, member FINRA, SIPC.